You are so loving and tolerant and patient. I appreciate that. My name is Doug and I am alcoholic. And once again, I bring you greetings from the Young at Heart group in Los Gatos, California. The best group in Alcoholics Anonymous that meets in that church on that day. It really is. I posted on their Facebook page this morning that I was here and that I was going to convey their regards to you. And I know it always warms their heart because they are definitely a 12-step focused group of Alcoholics Anonymous. They love to carry the message. They carry the message with a lot of vitality and energy and in a way that's very infectious and attractive. And so that's why they're my home group. And again, I thank you for sticking around for the day and attending the convention. And we get to talk about step 12 now. And step 12 is, you know, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. And there's a lot of meat to that. There's a lot of things that can be talked about with that. And what I'm going to attempt to do in the course of about 45 minutes or so is talk a little bit about what a spiritual awakening is, or at least what my spiritual experiences have been. And then to talk a little bit about how do we carry the message and what kind of a message do we carry? Because the step, talks about all of those things. In the big book, there's only one chapter that's dedicated to a single step. And that's chapter 7, and working with others. And it opens up, it's all about step 12. It doesn't talk about anything else. It's funny because sometimes in AA we get up to step 12 and go like, how do I do a 12-step call? And I because of some of the service that I get to do these days, people will write to the office in New York and we'll see these requests for, we need a pamphlet on how to do a 12-step call and we need a booklet on how to do a 12-step call. And in many ways, we've lost the skill of doing a 12-step call, but all the instructions have been right in our big book all along. And sometimes we, as Michael was saying, you know, if you want to hide something from an alcoholic, put it in their heart, but we can also put it in the big book too and forget that it's there. But it opens up by talking about how that practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. And by intensive work, it's not just taking them to meetings. You know, I misunderstood that. It said, this is our 12th suggestion. Carry this message to our other alcoholics. You can help when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember that they're very ill. And then what will happen by doing that? It says that life will take on new meaning. To watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. We know you'll not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot in our life. That sounds like a total personality change. You know, in the second appendix of our big book, it talks about a spiritual awakening or a spiritual experience. Dr. Silkworth talked about a psychic change that happens. And all they mean is that some sort of a change has happened in us to bring about recovery from alcoholism that has manifested itself in us. And sometimes it happens quickly, sometimes it happens slowly as a result of the work that we do in admitting our powerlessness and turning our will and our lives over and taking the inventory and making the amends and starting to work with others. Our personality changes. And it's when you see somebody who has had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, you can hardly hold them back from trying to do 12-step work or trying to help other alcoholics. You know, we've gotten this gift. I didn't even pay for it. Yeah, I might have put a few kolna in the basket as it came around, but I didn't pay for this. Yet it was granted to me. And look at this life that I have today. And it's not about all the toys and prizes and cars and houses and boyfriends, girlfriends, husbands, children, whatever. What it is that peace and that serenity inside that happens that I didn't have before. It's the ability to look people in the eye that I didn't have before. It's the ability to be able to show up at my job and have them welcome me, you know, It's my dog doesn't bite me anymore. You know, sometimes it's as simple as those kinds of things. And it's really the culmination of our mission, of our personality change that happens. You know, it says, it starts off with a statement that says that if I take these steps, I will have a spiritual awakening. My spirit will become awake. And it may be a burning bush variety. It might be like mine, the educational variety. It happened over time. Gradually, my whole attitude and outlook on life began to change. And I didn't recognize it, but other people recognized it in me. And all of a sudden, there would be a little bit of time between when I'd seen somebody and they're like, Doug, you're different today. You seem a lot calmer now. In fact, there was one old timer once. I spoke at a meeting. I probably had about 10 or 12 years sober at the time. And I talked about what probably a pain in the ass I was when I was first here and to a lot of people. And with one loving old timer, he's unfortunately passed on now, but he came up to me and he goes, yeah, Doug, you were a little bit hard to take back then. I was like, thank you for telling me that and also for tolerating me and loving me in spite of myself. They carried a big message to me that I didn't have to live that old way anymore. The big book is really explicit on how to do it. Well, let me not go forward on that. The 12 and 12 talks about how our 12th step is really the joy of living. You know, life gets really good. I love my life today as a result of that I'm not, you know, throwing up in the morning anymore or doing the crazy things that I used to do and the step and the toes that I used to step on and the people that I used to sleep with and the things that I used to steal and the lies that I used to tell. I don't have that anymore. And life is really good now as a result of that. And the whole theme of step 12 is the joy of living. And this is where I'm going to start turning outward towards the people around me. And it's not just the people in AA. You know, there are people outside of AA. As I mentioned last night, I'm helping a guy right now who's not an alcoholic, but he loves AA. And he's fascinated by us. He's read some of our literature. And he was like, I think a lot of people should study this stuff. And I'm like, well, you know, some people believe that, you know, but we're here to help alcoholics. And he goes, well, can I use this for stopping smoking? And I said, sure. But I'm not a member of Smokers Anonymous, and I'm not a member of, you know, Nicotine Anonymous, and I don't know what their literature says. He goes, no, it doesn't matter. I want you to walk me through the big book as though I was an alcoholic, but I'm just going to interpret it in my mind to be smoking. I said, fine, that's all I can do. And so, you know, one day he'll get this. He's back smoking now, but that's okay. And we're going to do it. And his spiritual experience is already happening. You know, he hasn't quite put down the cigarette yet, but his spiritual experience has already started because he's seeing the world differently. Excuse me. And what's neat about step 12 is that we do this without any expectation of any rewards from anybody else. You know, we don't have classes on AA that you have to sign up for and pay a fee for. Nobody gets paid to do 12-step work, thank God. We have a few traditions that talk about how money will kind of divert us from our primary purpose. We do this for free and for fun. We do this because my life was saved, and I have to give it away. I'm not because I'm obligated to do so. I have to give it away because there were people there who gave it to me when I walked in the doors. So, you know, that joy, that spiritual program experience that I've had has enabled me to have a beautiful life today. My spiritual awakening also comes, somebody told me about the three A's. The three A's is that, you know, I've admitted that I'm an alcoholic. I've accepted my alcoholism. And now I actually approve that I'm an alcoholic. I approve that I'm an alcoholic. I didn't want to be an alcoholic. I didn't grow up in second grade in school when they all said, what do you kids want to be when you grow up? You know, I didn't raise my hand and say, you know, I want to be a Norwegian queer alcoholic with blue eyes that you know, almost died because I drank too much. You know, that was not my plan. My plan was, you know, I wanted to become a diplomat or I wanted to become a pilot or something else, you know. But I became alcoholic. That wasn't my plan. But I approve of my alcoholism now. And when I get up here and I say, my name is Doug and I am a grateful alcoholic, I say that because I'm grateful I became an alcoholic because I'm an alcoholic, I found a way of life that was so different than the life that I had before. And had I not become alcoholic, I may not have had that. You know, the normies out there, they don't have a program, you know, that, or maybe they do. Maybe they have it through their church or through their club or societies or whatever. But they don't have a program for living like I have a program for living. You know, I have a program for living that's very, very simple. And it's written down in numerical order so I can follow it at any time. And all I have to do is try to do that to the best of my ability. And as my sponsor used to always say, Doug, we're asking you to take steps that you cannot understand or may not understand, but you're going to get results beyond your wildest dreams. And I believed him. I knew that there was no reason for him to lie to me about that. And he always reminded me of that. You're going to get results beyond your wildest dreams. You know, me being in Copenhagen is beyond my wildest dreams. You know, if I had not gotten sober, where would I be today? You know, I'd probably like work flipping burgers in a restaurant somewhere, complaining about the state of the world, or I would be in a hospital, or I'd be jail, or I might be dead. You know, the way I was going, I got sober at 24, I would probably be dead by today. You know, I'm 53 now. So, you know, we give this for free and for fun. Under the theme of what is a spiritual awakening, our literature talks about there is as many ways to have a spiritual awakening as there are people who have done this. And all it means is that, you know, my spirit has become alive and it is now awake. And that means so many different things to so many different people. We can have meetings and sharing sessions on that subject alone. Like, what is a spiritual experience for you? How was your spiritual experience? As I mentioned yesterday, one of my early spiritual experiences is when somebody said, how long have you been sober? My sponsor said, how long have you been sober? I said, 2 months. And he said, well, were you ever able to stay sober 2 months on your own willpower? I said, no. He said, then something is working in your life. And all of a sudden I thought, wow, there's some spirit in me that's keeping me alive. There's some spirit in me that sees a higher purpose for me somewhere, and I don't know what it is. But my job is to try to seek that out. So, you know, without getting into deep conversation about spiritual experience, because we are all so unique in what those have been, what is the message and how do we carry it, I think, is probably more the subject that we would probably benefit from talking about. I think I've already been going for, what, like 10 minutes or something? All right. I wasn't keeping track. I'm going to reset my timer. Thanks. Okay. Thank you for your help. Anything that we do to try to carry the message to a fellow sufferer is considered to be 12-step work. Plain and simple. In 1941, even our co-founder Bill W. said that our greatest responsibility to the newcomer is an adequate presentation of the program. So obviously, you know, the best thing we can do is if we've taken the steps and we've had our lives changed as a result of it, we try to carry the message to somebody else. And basically, not teach them what we did, we show by our example of what we did. And I'm very careful with the people that I work with. I tell them right up front, it's like, I'm not a marriage counselor, I'm not a money counselor. A is probably the worst place you can go to for money advice. Yeah, right? Or even relationship advice. We'll talk about that tomorrow morning. But I said, all I can share with you is my experience. And if my experience can be helpful to you, it's yours. It's yours. Whatever I have is yours. And that's where I come from when I try to carry the message. What we talk about at meetings is important as well when carrying the message. What kind of a message am I carrying if I get up at a meeting and all I'm doing is just, you know, vomiting all over the podium because I need to share today. I need to unload today. You know, one of our, a woman who's dead now, she used to get up and yell at the group and she said, damn it, AA is not a spiritual toilet for you to come here and dump in, you know. We are here to carry the message. When that newcomer walks in the door, hopefully because they saw this light or whatever prompted them to get in here, this might be the one and only time they're ever going to be exposed to Alcoholics Anonymous. What are we talking about at our meetings? You know, are we talking about, you know, the baseball game or the football game? Or are we talking about politics? Are we talking about religion? Are we talking about these other things? We don't. We talk about alcoholism and recovery from alcoholism because that's what we have in common. And I always pray that when I go to, I went to a meeting in Japan once, and this meeting, they were talking about the cherry blossoms, and this one woman was talking about a bad hangnail that she had to go to the doctor for, and another one was talking about their hangovers, and another one was talking about how their favorite baseball team wasn't performing well. And I kept sitting there in the meeting going like, but what if somebody's like, thinks that this is what AA talks about, you know? And they come in here and they can't relate, you know, or worse yet, you know, Mary Lee and I were talking earlier, what if somebody was wearing, you know, a football team jersey with their favorite team on it, and somebody who happened to follow another team walked in and was like, oh, I can't approach them. You know, they're a 49ers fan, and I'm an Oakland Raiders fan, and they're like rivals, and I can't go talk to that person. What kind of a message am I carrying, even by the clothing that I wear? Doesn't mean that I have to walk around with a suit and tie and a tuxedo all the time. But what it is that, you know, we suit up and we show up, and that in itself is also carrying a message. Do I have to wait until I get to step 12 before I can carry a message? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. There's a number of different trains of thought on this. And I've heard people say, like, you know, yes, you have to, you know, don't start talking to a newcomer until you've been through your inventory, or don't do it until such and such. When I had 9 years sober, I remember this vividly. I went to my home group one night, and one of the guys that I was sponsoring, he just celebrated 90 days sober. So excited. Just had his 90 days sober. And he was talking to this newcomer who had about 7 or 8 days. And I see them over there talking. I'm, you know, feeling a little bit prideful that my sponsee is off helping a newcomer, right? You know, and I thought, well, I may just saunter over to this little soiree and impart some of my deep knowledge and wisdom on this group. And I walk up to them, and the newcomers turn into my sponsee going like, how did you stay sober for 90 days? I mean, that's like amazing. That's like, maybe it's attainable, and what did you need to do? And he looks at me and he says, how long are you sober? And I said, 9 years. And his eyes just like glazed over. He can't relate to 9 years. And he went back to my sponsor going, no, 90 days. Tell me about 90 days. And the reason why I bring that up is because, you know, if you only have a week sober, you can help somebody by sharing with them, with somebody coming up behind you with only 3 days sober, how did you stay sober for a week? You may not know, you know, the steps or the traditions or the slogans or anything yet, but you can help them by showing them the image of a sober person who's been able to stay sober for 7 days. You know? So I'm always very sensitive to that. I'm not very, because, you know, newcomers can carry a message in a way that I can no longer carry a message. You know, somebody with 5 years can carry a message to somebody with 1 year in a way that I can no longer do, because I have 29. And so I treasure that, and I really hope that you take that to heart, that you have a job that I can't do, that a lot of us old timers can't do, but you can. And we need you to be able to do that work to help them so that they can get sober. The other thing, she keeps falling over, doesn't she? Yeah. That's a photo of the woman who, this is God's photo, you know, that I talked about last night, G-O-D, Geraldine O'Delaney. Yeah, I keep her obituary in there just as a reminder. In the 12th step also, you know, newcomers can also get a lot of rewards from doing the 12th step. My first sponsor had me, back in my day, I'm starting to sound old, back in my day, we used to go on 12 step calls. And we would get a call from central office, and they would say that there was this drunk who had called us and was looking for help. And my sponsor would call me and say, okay, Doug, you know, what are you doing tonight? And I was like, well, I was going to stay home and watch TV. He goes, good, be ready in 10 minutes. I'll be by to pick you up. And he'd say, get in the car. And I remember once we went off to a hospital where this drunk was. He'd called and asked for help. And we got there, and the patient in the bed in the hospital was actually a doctor. He was a doctor. And I'm like, I'm flashing back to, you know, Bill telling Dr. Bob about Dr. Bob's problem, and he's not even a physician. And we didn't tell the doctor about his problem. We talked about us. We talked about what we did. Now, the whole notion of our 12-step call, let me back that up. The idea of sharing our experience with the next drunk really started back, as far as I understand, back when Dr. Bob was visited by Bill the very first time. Up to that point, Bill was sober for 6-7 months, tried helping drunks by trying to shove that spiritual experience down their throats. And you can't shove anything down the throat of a drunk, they'll throw it back at you, you know. And he would go to Dr. Silkworth and his wife Lois and say, you know, these people aren't staying sober. They're like, your approach is all wrong. And he said, you know, stop trying to push that white light experience down their throat. And instead, thank you. And instead, talk about the hopelessness of the illness first. Get their attention. You know, you have a way they can relate to that. They can talk about the hopelessness and talk about some of the things that you did, you know, the jobs that you lost and the cars that you wrecked and the you know, women that you danced with that weren't your wife, and you know, talk about those things, and you'll get their attention. But even more so, and it even talks about it in our big book, they said, learn all you can about them, because then you'll be most helpful to them and even to their families. So, you know, when Dr. Bob was sick and Bill showed up in town and shows up there, Bill didn't tell Dr. Bob about Dr. Bob's problem. Bill told Dr. Bob about Bill, and he shared with Bill about his problem and how he got sober. And that had enough depth and weight to it that Dr. Bob was intrigued, and he decided to try to stay sober. And so how we carry that message, you know, our big book is very clear about, you know, learn all you can about them first, talk about the hopelessness of the illness, then approach them with the fact that we have a spiritual solution, and it's going to require a bit of work. You're going to have to get honest with yourself, and you're going to have to, you know, clean up the wreckage of your past and stuff. But look at me now. This is the kind of person I am. And if you want what I have, do what I do and go where I go, and you'll get what I got. So, in fact, it's funny because our big book even says, don't give them a copy of this book right away, because you might scare them off. You might intimidate them. Just talk to them. One drunk talking to another. And the beauty about our 12th step is that we're able to do things that doctors can't even do, that priests can't even do. You know, the most learned minds can't do what one drunk can do by talking to another drunk. We can secure their confidence in a way that, you know, I don't know about you, but if a doctor tried to tell me about my problem, I'd be like, what did you learn in medical school? You know, you can't relate to me. You know, I told that to a psychiatrist. You can't relate to me. You've never had these problems. What do you know? You can't tell that to an alcoholic, because we know, we've been there. We've been at the gates of hell and come back again. We understand. So how we carry that message, my mind is like racing in a bunch of different directions, and I apologize for that. So the 12-step call itself can be just that. It can be, you know, sharing your experience, strength, and hope with somebody who doesn't have it. And hopefully they'll get interested enough to start coming to meetings, and then you can sit down with them and then share even more experience with them about how did you stay sober. But oftentimes people don't come to us just off the street. I don't know if the general population in Denmark knows about AA. You know, if I just stopped somebody on the street and said, do you know about Alcoholics Anonymous? Would they say yes or no? The flight attendant on my flight did. She knew about AA. Okay, that's great. She said 1 out of 4 probably understands about AA. Some countries, it's much less than that. Japan, you could probably talk to 3,000 people and maybe one will have heard of us. So our 12-step work can also be reaching out through public information and letting the general public know that we exist. And it could be putting an ad in a newspaper. It could be putting a flyer on a bulletin board in a supermarket that says, hey, do you have a problem with drinking? Might want to think about trying Alcoholics Anonymous, and here's the location of the nearest meeting. That's 12-step work. Putting money in the basket is 12-step work. Because when I put extra money into the basket, not only does it go to help support my group, but when the group has enough money that goes beyond its prudent reserve, what do? We forward it on to the central office, we forward it on to our general service office. so that that 12-step work can be done. Literature translations can be done. Public information materials can be created. You can send your delegate to the World Service meeting so that they can get more experience, strength, and hope from other countries who are also attending that annual meeting. You know, yes, AA is free, but it does take money to operate and to for us to be able to do our 12-step work. We don't get paid for our 12-step work, but the money in the basket goes to help to pay the services that support us so that we have the tools so we can do our 12-step work. It's probably the easiest way I can explain it that way. I can also do a little inventory about how well am I doing my own 12-step work. In the 12 and 12, you know, it talks about, you know, sort of I have mine, and am I passing that on? You know, am I practicing it in my family? Do I have the same kind of confidence and faith in people, other people that have been crippled by our illness, and do I trust them? Do I welcome anybody who walks in the door? Is there only certain people, types of alcoholics that I like that come in the door? You know, one group that I know too has a lot of very pretty people in it. I don't know why. They grow them there or something. But when somebody who may not be up to, you know, the pretty standard, I guess, that group might have, it's amazing to watch that people don't stick their hand out. And I'm like, I'm the first one back there. It's like, welcome. Never seen you here before. Come on in. We welcome everybody who comes in. We don't ask them what kind of a job they have. We don't ask them what kind of a car they drive. We don't care. We don't care. All we care about is, do you have a problem with drinking and do you want to do something about it? And if you do, come on in because we got a solution that works for us. And it's a lot of fun at the same time. But when I was new, all I knew was what we call two-stepping. You know, I come in, I take the first step and go, okay, I'm powerless. Now let me drag everybody else in who's also powerless, but I have nothing to tell them. You know, and I probably did a lot more harm doing that than I did any good. Today, when I see somebody come in, we always try to have them meet up with somebody who they can really relate to. And I try to keep it really grounded and humble in that sense. I don't have the answers for everybody, but there was another point that I wanted to raise. Okay, good. This we may end a little bit early because my voice is going, but practicing these principles in all our affairs is the other side of this step as well. And what does that really mean? The principles that we've been talking about, sometimes you'll see, or I've seen people say that, you know, every step has a particular principle that's associated with it. AA has never codified a single step into a single principle. But generally, they are things like, you know, honesty, hope, acceptance, you know, integrity, humility, brotherly love, judgment, you know, good judgment, willingness. These types of spiritual principles I need to practice in all my affairs. And so what that means is it's very easy to do that in the meeting, you know, for the 1 hour a day. But how am I behaving the rest of the 23 hours a day? How am I behaving in my home? Do I treat people in my home worse than I treat the people in the meetings? Am I nicer to the newcomer that walks in, but yet I won't talk to my spouse when I get home? Am I very lavish at home with my money, but yet I'm really chintzy with my group, yet AA saved my life? How is my seventh tradition contribution a reflection of my gratitude for staying sober? How am I behaving at work? You know, do I walk into work and be a know-it-all and people won't approach me because I'm such a know-it-all? Or do I have a sense of humility at work? And do I have a partnership with my employees at work? It's interesting, we were talking a little bit earlier. You know, there are certain principles that I learned in doing service in AA that I carry into my workplace. Like, we were going to have to talk about what to do on a certain project. I said, let's hold a sharing session format. And they look at me like, what's a sharing session format? We don't know what a sharing session format is. And I'm like, okay, well, we're going to go all the way around the room and we're going to have everybody speak and you can only speak once. And if somebody wants to speak a second time, I'm going to shut you down until everybody else has a chance to speak first. They didn't like that because there was three people who had very loud voices that wanted to be heard. And yet, I've seen this work in AA and it works really well. And we encourage the small, quiet voices to come out because, as you and I know, we don't know who God's going to pick that day to carry a message, right? And so it might be that really timid, small voice that says, hey, I kind of think maybe we should do this. Like, you know what? Bingo, you're right. Absolutely right. And instead of the loud voice. And so when I tried that at work, they were like baffled. And because the three loudmouths wanted to do all the talking. And but yet at the end of the meeting, they were like, Doug, that was absolutely awesome. Where did you learn to do that? Now, I couldn't say I learned it in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, because I'm anonymous at the public level. And I'm not anonymous with you. I mean, I'll give my full name, not while I'm recorded, but I'll give you my full name and address and all my details. But I am anonymous at the public level. People at work only know if I'm in AA on an as-needed-to-know basis. And so I just said, yeah, I've done some nonprofit work, and this is one of the techniques that I've seen used there, and it works really well. And I'm like, well, we're going to start doing that all the time, you know. So AA has now infiltrated my office without them even knowing it, you know. Where do I want to go next with this? The other challenge is when you're the speaker that's right before dinner and everybody's like, hurry up and get done so we can go to dinner. I'll just share a couple of other things. And there's one piece that also was in the grapevine that I wanted to end with. When we do a good 12-step call, I don't know about you, but some of my best memories in Alcoholics Anonymous is when I've done a really good 12-step call. I'll share one with you. A number of years ago, I'd been going back and forth to Japan on business, and there was one particular group that I used to attend whenever I was in town. And I got a call on my answering machine one day, and this man said, hey, this is so-and-so. I've just drank, but I hope you're well. Click. And he hung up the phone. Now, I immediately called him back, and I said, hey, I'm going to get on an airplane tomorrow and come to Japan. Now, he thought I was coming for him. What God knew was that he was going to need me, and I had already planned a business trip to be there the next week. But I said, I'm going to come to Japan. I'm going to see you. Are you available on Sunday at 2 p.m.? Will you meet with me? He said, yes, I'll meet with you. Now, he's half drunk when I'm talking to him, and I don't know if he's going to make it or not. But I got on my plane, and I flew to Tokyo, and I went to that train station at 2 p.m. like I said I would. And sure enough, there he was. He showed up. And I thought, great. Now, I was always taught, never go on a 12-step call on your own. You know, always go with somebody else. But I didn't have anybody else to go with me. So I prayed on that train. I said, God, please keep me safe. No matter what happens, please keep me safe and let me carry a message that you would find helpful to this drunk. And I met him, and we immediately went over to a coffee shop that had a liquor license, and he proceeds to order 3 scotch and waters while we're sitting there. And I'm talking a little bit about, you know, staying sober and, you know, what happened and why did you relapse? And he stopped and he said, Doug, I don't know a single member in this whole country that would sit here with me when I have 3 scotch and water sitting in front of me and you have a cup of coffee and they would stay here. They would go running out of this place so quickly. Why can you do this? And I said, well, one, it's my duty. You asked for help. And it's my duty to be here to try to help. Second, I prayed about it. I ask God to keep me safe. And I'm fully convinced that God will keep me safe. Even if you have 3 scotch and waters in front of you, there is no temptation. And indeed, there was not. And third, I said, right now, sitting here at 2 p.m., you don't have a desire to stop drinking. So, and I'm not going to chastise you for that. You're an alcoholic. You're doing what's normal. We drink. We drink. That's normal for us. Not drinking is not normal for an alcoholic of my type. And I said, right now at 2 p.m., you don't have a desire to stop drinking, and there's nothing I can do about that except for just to be here for you. And he was astonished. It just blew his mind. And I said, but what I don't know is I don't know how you'll feel at 4 o'clock. I don't know how you'll feel at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning or even next week. And we left, and he was grateful for that. And 3 days later, he checked himself into a treatment center. And as far as I know, he got sober for a while, and I don't know if he's sober today. I've lost track of him. But the point was is that I wasn't going there to try to get him sober. I was going there because he asked for help, and I got to be there for him. And as a result of that, his higher power got him into treatment. I don't take any credit for that. All I did was I showed up. Another 12-step call that comes to my memory was a woman in my office struggling to stay sober. There was also another old-timer woman in my office. She had over 30 years. And I had probably about 6 or 7 years at this point. And This poor woman could not get sober to save her life. About every 27, 28 days, she would go back out and get drunk. And we were baffled. 3 months in a row, she could not get 30 days. Now, for me, 30 days is the mark. If you can stay 30 days, but she couldn't get 30 days. And I didn't understand it until this old-timer woman said, "Watch this." And she went up to that woman and she said, "How many days are you sober now?" And she says, 26. I said, "Good. Tomorrow night, for the next 4 nights, you're staying at my house." She knew something that a male alcoholic does not know about what will happen to this woman in about 2 days. And so she kidnapped that poor alcoholic woman, took her home, kept her at home while she went through this hormonal change that would always make her drink. And she stayed sober. She got through it. We all have our skills in how we can help carry a message. And that was one that I did not have and I would never have recognized. And I thank God that there was another woman in the office who recognized what I was doing wrong. I thought it was just stay sober for 30 days, damn it, and you'll be fine. It was far beyond that. It was far beyond my understanding. And so we all have ways that we can carry a message. And it might be just, you know, setting up coffee and sitting in a meeting and showing the image of a sober person to that newcomer who walks in who has no hope and no smile. And it might also be getting active and doing committee work. You know, serving on this convention is 12-step work. Pouring the coffee, sitting at the literature table in the back is 12-step work because you'll have the literature here for some newcomer who needs it. In the 12 and 12, what are the promises that we get from doing a good 12-step job? And I'm going to end with this and I'll read that one piece from the grapevine. It says, in well-matured AAs, and I like to think that I'm striving to maybe become one of them in one day, in well-matured AAs, these distorted drives that we used to have been restored to something like their true purpose and direction. We no longer strive to dominate or rule those about us in order to gain self-importance. We no longer seek fame or honor in order to be praised. When devoted service to family, friends, business, and community, we attract widespread affection and are sometimes singled out for posts of greater responsibility and trust. Nobody trusted me when I got here. Today, people can trust me. My word is mostly good, and mostly I try my best. We try to be humbly grateful, and exert ourselves in love and service, because true leadership we find depends on able example, not upon vain displays of power or glory. You know, and I see people sometimes who have to try to display those vain displays of power and glory in some of the service circles that I hang out in. And it's not, one, it's not attractive. and it shows me what not to do. You know, our long form of our traditions, two traditions talk about how money, property, and authority will divert me from my primary purpose. It reminds me that I'm to maintain a humility. And as I said last night, a modesty about who and what I am and what I can do. And all I am is a drunk. No better and no worse than anybody else here. And I need to always remember that, or else I will end up, you know, being diverted from my primary purpose. And it goes on and about some of the other benefits that we get as a result of doing our 12th step. And I won't read that because there's nothing more boring than a speaker who just reads his whole talk. But I ask you, go back later and read your 12 and 12. Go to that step 12 in that last, you know, two or three paragraphs. And talks about the joys and the benefits that we get as a result of being of service. Now, again, like I said, we don't do this for anything except to be helpful to those who suffer. And I'll end with this one piece. I was thinking about it just the other night as I was trying to figure out how did I want to prepare my notes for this talk. And I was reminded of an article that appeared in the Grapevine. That was, I don't remember, I think it was called Flightline, was the original title on it. But in essence, it's sort of like, let me just read it to you. It says, next fall, when you see geese heading south for the winter, flying in a V formation, you might like to consider what science has discovered about why geese fly like this. It has been learned that each bird flaps its wings and creates an uplift for the bird immediately following. And by flying in the V formation, the whole flock adds at least 71% greater flight range than it would if each bird flew on its own. People who share a common direction and a sense of community can get where they're going quicker and easier because they're traveling on the uplift of one another. When a goose falls out of formation, it immediately feels the drag and resistance of trying to go it alone and quickly gets back into formation to take advantage of the lifting power of the bird immediately in front. If we have as much sense as a goose, we will stay in formation with those who are headed in the same direction as we are. When the lead goose gets tired, it rotates back in formation and another goose flies point. It pays to take turns doing the jobs, especially the hard jobs. The geese honk from behind to encourage those up front to keep up their speed. We too say something when we honk from behind. And finally, now I want you to get this. When a goose gets sick or wounded by gunshot and falls out down to the ground, two geese fall out of formation and follow it and help and protect it. They stay with that ailing goose until it is either able to fly or until it dies. Then they launch out on their own or with another formation and try to catch up with the group. If we had the simple sense of a goose, we would stand by each other just like that. Nothing is worse than when we cast away our challenged members who don't seem to get it. You know, Thomas Edison was successful on his 90-some-odd attempt at creating light filament, and I'm glad he didn't give up and say, fuck it, at number 80. And he kept trying. We always need to keep trying. We need to keep trying to help those who are coming in behind us, and we need to keep trying to keep ourselves sober as well. So I'll just leave it at that. I'm out of time. Thank you so much for listening to me. Okay.